Chapter 15. Chapter, only it may surprise you is Miss Suss wouldn't hear of it. Funny, eh? But with women, you never know how they will take a thing, and Mrs. Colchester, with her mustaches and big eyebrows, set up for being as strong-minded as they make them. She used to walk about in a brown silk dress, with a great gold cable flopping about her bosom. You should have heard her snapping out. Rubbish. ... her stuff and nonsense. ... I dare say she knew when she was well off. They had no children, and had never set up a home anywhere. When in England she just made shift to hang out anyhow in some cheap hotel or boarding house. I dare say she liked to get back to the comforts she was used to. She knew very well she couldn't gain by any change. And, moreover, Colchester, though a first-rate man, was not what you may call in his first youth, and, perhaps, she may have thought that he wouldn't be able to get hold of another, as he used to say, so easily. Anyhow, for one reason or another, it was rubbish, and stuff and nonsense for the good lady. I overheard once young Mr. Apps himself say to her confidentially, "I assure you, Mrs. Colchester, I am beginning to feel quite unhappy about the name she's getting for herself." ... says she, with her deep little hoarse laugh, "if one took notice of all the silly talk, ... and she showed Apps all her ugly false teeth at once. It would take more than that to make me lose my confidence in her, I assure you, ... says she." At this point, without any change of facial expression, Mr. Stoner emitted a short, sardonic laugh. It was very impressive, but I didn't see the fun. I looked from one to another. The stranger on the hearthrug had an ugly smile. And Mr. Apps shook both Mrs. Colchester's hands. He was so pleased to hear a good word said for their favorite. All these Appses, young and old you know, were perfectly infatuated with that abominable, Dangerous, I beg your pardon, I interrupted, for he seemed to be addressing himself exclusively to me. "But who on earth are you talking about?" "I am talking of the Apps family," he answered, courteously. I nearly let out a damn at this. But just then the respected Miss Blank put her head in, and said that the cab was at the door, if Mr. Stoner wanted to catch the 11:03 up. At once the senior pilot arose in his mighty bulk, and began to struggle into his coat, with awe-inspiring upheavals. The stranger and I hurried impulsively to his assistance, and directly we laid our hands on him, he became perfectly quiescent. We had to raise our arms very high, and to make efforts. It was like caparisoning a docile elephant. With a "Thanks, gentlemen," he dived under, and squeezed himself through the door in a great hurry. We smiled at each other in a friendly way. "I wonder how he manages to hoist himself up a ship's side ladder," said the man in tweeds. And poor German, who was a mere North Sea pilot, without official status or recognition of any sort, pilot only by courtesy, groaned. "He makes 800 a year. Are you a sailor?" I asked the stranger, who had gone back to his position on the rug. "I used to be till a couple of years ago, when I got married," answered this communicative individual. I even went to sea first in that very ship we were speaking of when you came in." "What ship?" I asked, puzzled. "I never heard you mention a ship." "I've just told you her name, my dear sir," he replied. "The Apps family. Surely you've heard of the great firm of Apps and Sons, ship owners. They had a pretty big fleet. There was the Lucy Apps, and the Harold Apps, and Anne, John, Malcolm, Clara, Juliet, and so on, no end of Appses. Every brother, sister, aunt, cousin, wife, and grandmother too, for all I know of the firm had a ship named after them. Good, solid, old-fashioned craft they were too, built to carry and to last. None of your newfangled, labor-saving appliances in them, but plenty of men and plenty of good salt beef, and hard tack put aboard and off you go to fight your way out and home again." The miserable German made a sound of approval, which sounded like a groan of pain. those were the ships for him. He pointed out in doleful tones that you couldn't say to labor-saving appliances, colon, jump lively now, my hearties. No labor-saving appliance would go aloft on a dirty night with the sands under your lee. No, assented the stranger, with a wink at me. The Yapses didn't believe in them either, apparently. They treated their people well as people don't get treated nowadays, and they were awfully proud of their ships. Nothing ever happened to them. This last one, the Yap's family, was to be like the others, only she was to be still stronger, still safer, still more roomy and comfortable. I believe they meant her to last forever. They had her built composite iron, teak wood, and greenheart, and her scantling was something fabulous. If ever an order was given for a ship in a spirit of pride, this one was. Everything of the best. The Commodore, captain of the employ, was to command her, and they planned the accommodation for him like a house on shore under a big tall poop that went nearly to the mainmast. No wonder Mrs. Colchester wouldn't let the old man give her up. Why, it was the best home she ever had in all her married days. She had a nerve, that woman. The fuss that was made while that ship was building. Let's have this a little stronger, and that a little heavier, and hadn't that other thing better be changed for something a little thicker. The builders entered into the spirit of the game, and there she was, growing into the clumsiest, heaviest ship of her size right before all their eyes, without anybody becoming aware of it somehow. She was to be 2,000 tons register, or a little over, no less on any account. But see what happens. When they came to measure her, she turned out 1999 tons and a fraction. General consternation. And they say old Mr. Apps was so annoyed when they told him that he took to his bed and died. The old gentleman had retired from the firm 25 years before, and was 96 years old if a day, so his death wasn't, perhaps, so surprising. Still, Mr. Lucian Apps was convinced that his father would have lived to 100. So we may put him at the head of the list. Next comes the poor devil of a shipwright, that brute caught and squashed as she went off the ways. They called it the launch of a ship, but I've heard people say that, from the wailing and yelling and scrambling out of the way, it was more like letting a devil loose upon the river. She snapped all her checks like pack thread, and went for the tugs in attendance like a fury. Before anybody could see what she was up to, she sent one of them to the bottom, and laid up another for 3 months' repairs. One of her cables parted, and then, suddenly you couldn't tell why she let herself be brought up with the other as quiet as a lamb. That's how she was. You could never be sure what she would be up to next. There are ships difficult to handle, but generally you can depend on them behaving rationally. With that ship, whatever you did with her, you never knew how it would end. She was a wicked beast. Or, perhaps, she was only just insane. He uttered this supposition in so earnest a tone that I could not refrain from smiling. He left off biting his lower lip to apostrophize me. Eh? Why not? Why couldn't there be something in her build, in her lines corresponding to what's madness? Only something just a tiny bit wrong in the make of your brain. Why shouldn't there be a mad ship, I mean mad in a ship-like way, so that under no circumstances could you be sure she would do what any other sensible ship would naturally do for you? There are ships that steer wildly, and ships that can't be quite trusted always to stay. Others want careful watching when running in a gale, and, again, there may be a ship that will make heavy weather of it in every little blow. But then you expect her to be always so. You take it as part of her character, as a ship, just as you take account of a man's peculiarities of temper when you deal with him. But with her you couldn't. She was unaccountable. If she wasn't mad, then she was the most evil-minded, underhand, savage brute that ever went afloat. I've seen her run in a heavy gale beautifully for 2 days, and on the third broached it twice in the same afternoon. The first time she flung the helmsman clean over the wheel, but as she didn't quite manage to kill him, he had another try about 3 hours afterwards. She swamped herself fore and aft, burst all the canvas we had set, scared all hands into a panic, and even frightened Mrs. Colchester down there in these beautiful stern cabins that she was so proud of. When we mustered the crew, there was one man missing. Swept overboard, of course, without being either seen or heard. Poor devil. And I only wonder more of us didn't go. Always something like that. Always. I heard an old mate tell Captain Colchester once that it had come to this with him, that he was afraid to open his mouth, to give any sort of order. She was as much of a terror in harbor as at sea. You could never be certain what would hold her. On the slightest provocation she would start snapping ropes, cables, wire hawsers, like carrots. She was heavy, clumsy, unhandy, but that does not quite explain that power for mischiefess he had. You know, somehow, when I think of her, I can't help remembering what we hear of incurable lunatics breaking loose now and then. He looked at me inquisitively. But, of course, I couldn't admit that a ship could be mad. In the ports where she was known, he went on, apostrophe they dreaded the sight of her. She thought nothing of knocking away 20 feet or so of solid stone facing off a quay, or wiping off the end of a wooden wharf. She must have lost miles of chain and hundreds of tons of anchors in her time. When she fell aboard some poor unoffending ship, it was the very devil of a job to haul her off again. And she never got hurt herself, just a few scratches or so, perhaps. They had wanted to have her strong. And so she was. Strong enough to ram polar ice with. And as she began, so she went on. From the day she was launched, she never let a year pass without murdering somebody. I think the owners got very worried about it. But they were a stiff-necked generation, all these Apses. They wouldn't admit there could be anything wrong with the Aps family. They wouldn't even change her name. Stuff and nonsense, apostrophe, as Mrs. Colchester used to say. They ought at least to have shut her up for life in some dry dock or other, away up the river, and never let her smell salt water again. I assure you, my dear sir, that she invariably did kill someone every voyage she made. It was perfectly well known. She got a name for it, far and wide. I expressed my surprise that a ship with such a deadly reputation could ever get a crew. Then, you don't know what sailors are, my dear sir. Let me just show you by an instance. One day in dock at home, while loafing on the forecastle head, I noticed two respectable salts come along, one a middle-aged, competent, steady man, evidently, the other a smart, youngish chap. They read the name on the bows, and stopped to look at her. Says the elder man, Apps family. That's the sanguinary female dog, I'm putting it in that way, of a ship, Jack, that kills a man every voyage. I wouldn't sign in her not for Joe, I wouldn't. Apostrophe apostrophe and the other says, if she were mine, I'd have her towed on the mud and set on fire, blam if I wouldn't. Apostrophe apostrophe then the first man chimes in. Much do they care. Men are cheap, God knows. Apostrophe the younger one spat in the water alongside. They won't have me not for double wages. Apostrophe apostrophe they hung about for some time, and then walked up the dock. Half an hour later I saw them both on our deck looking about for the mate, and apparently very anxious to be taken on. And they were. How do you account for this? I asked. What would you say, he retorted. Recklessness. The vanity of boasting in the evening to all their chums. We've just shipped in that there Apps family. Blow her. She ain't going to scare us. Apostrophe sheer sailor-like perversity. A sort of curiosity. Well, a little of all that, no doubt. I put the question to them in the course of the voyage. The answer of the elderly chap was, a man can die but once. Apostrophe apostrophe the younger assured me in a mocking tone that he wanted to see how she would do it this time. Apostrophe apostrophe but I tell you what, there was a sort of fascination about the brute. German, who seemed to have seen every ship in the world, broke in sulkily. I saw her once out of this very window towing up the river. A great black ugly thing, going along like a big hearse. Something sinister about her looks, wasn't there? Said the man in tweeds, looking down at old German with a friendly eye. I always had a sort of horror of her. She gave me a beastly shock when I was no more than 14, the very first day, nay, hour I joined her. Father came up to see me off, and was to go down to Gravesend with us. I was his second boy to go to sea. My big brother was already an officer then. We got on board about 11 in the morning, and found the ship ready to drop out of the basin, stern first. She had not moved 3 times her own length when, at a little pluck the tug gave her to enter the dock gates, she made one of her rampaging starts, and put such Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.